Hey everyone, and welcome to another edition of Seriously Risky Business. This is the podcast we do here at Risky Biz HQ, which is mostly targeted towards the government and policy set. I am joined, of course, by Tom Uren, who writes the Seriously Risky Business newsletter. G'day, Tom.
G'day, Pat. How are you?
Good, good. And before we get going, I would like to thank the Hewlett Foundation's Cyber Initiative for supporting this work, and also our sole lone corporate sponsor for this work, Proofpoint. Big thanks to both of you. And Tom, the newsletter you put together this week, it is, you know, of course, it's targeted towards policy and government folks, but I found that like this one is like, has a, you know, real broad appeal. Let's put it that way. We're not going deep in the weeds on government stuff. I want to start off with your first piece, which is the first item in the newsletter, which is angry. You're angry, Tom. And what you're angry about is Microsoft continuing to release these reports about, particularly about like, you know, China and Russia and whatnot, that just don't seem particularly grounded in reality. They don't seem to be setting good context that's going to really illuminate the people reading them. I mean, that's about right, isn't it? And this is stuff that we've talked about both in this podcast and on my podcast with Adam as well. You know, it just seems to be this thing that Microsoft's been doing all year, writing reports saying, you know, the front lines of the Russia-Ukraine war run through Redmond, and, you know, talking about coordination between cyber and conventional forces in Ukraine, and then not really backing it up. And you've just had a go at them over it, and I'm all here for it.
Yeah, to me, the problem is they take the most, maybe it's not the most important, but it's the most sensational part, and then they kind of exaggerate it and get it wrong. So the two examples I gave were they keep on talking about cyber and kinetic action by Russian forces in Ukraine being coordinated. And I think there's a big difference between coordination and having the same goal. So coordination is you're working together as a team, whereas having the same goal is you're trying to achieve the same objective. They're doing the same thing at the same time. That doesn't mean they're coordinated. And I think there's a huge difference in how effective cyber operations are. And to me, the examples they gave, it looks like more like Russian desperation than Russian coordination. We want to disrupt critical infrastructure. We'll throw everything we've got at it because we're under pressure.
But you're right. And there's a great line in there, which is correlation does not equal coordination, right? Which is a nice little twist on the old phrase there. But yeah, I mean, if you're attacking a Ukrainian energy grid, as you say, you're going to throw the kitchen sink at it. In this case, they're throwing an awful lot of cruise missiles and drones and things like that. And also, you know, it would not be surprising at all that there's a cyber component to this. But as you say, that doesn't mean there's coordination. That just means there's a broad objective and everybody's working towards it.
Yeah. And so that's the sort of first example I have a problem with. The second one was from about a month or so ago, and they talked about China's vulnerability disclosure regulations. And the take they had is that you have to tell the government first before you tell anyone else. And that's not actually what the law says. The law says that vendors have to tell the government pretty quickly, within 2 days. But individuals, essentially they can, they can't sell it, but they can kind of do whatever they like. They're not compelled to tell the government. They're not compelled to tell vendors. And so the way
this is something we've spoken about before, and this regulation by and large actually looks quite sensible. I mean, there's a few elements to it that you might not see happening in Western countries and whatnot, but it you know, it has been portrayed by Microsoft, and I've got to say by a lot of the tech press as well, who seem to pick it up, and whether that's because they got this from Microsoft or came to it on their own, there seems to be this idea that you know, if you find a bug in something, you got to give it to the government, then they tell you whether you can report it to the vendor or something. And it seems to be just grounded in nothing. You know, you've linked through to a human translation of this regulation from the newsletter, and you read through this regulation, and I don't think there's anyone listening to this who would read that and think it was some sort of crazy Chinese plot to seize O'Day, you know, seize the means of O'Day from the security research community.
Yeah, like in fairness, I think there is a reason to be concerned that China wants to weaponize its entire security community. Like they talk about civil military fusion, and they talk about you know, basically everyone being an arm of the state to some degree. So I think it's a legitimate concern. And but to me, that's even more reason to get it right. And the evidence they gave to me was not convincing at all. And so either, you know, maybe Microsoft does have evidence, but, you know, let's see it. Also, if you've got evidence, get the law right in the first place.
Like,
describe what's going on properly in the first place. If somehow, you know, they've got evidence that that's the way the law's in being interpreted, let's see it. I think it kind of undermines their claims when they get things wrong.
Yeah.
That's the real problem.
I agree. I was discussing this, actually, this very same topic with our colleague, Catalin Campanu, who writes Risky Business News. I was talking about this with him like a couple of days ago, and we were really stumped as to why Microsoft keeps doing this, because it's not like it really benefits Microsoft to be talking in this way. Like, the whole thing's really weird. And it's like, you know, especially like that line of like the front lines running through Redmond and whatever. Like, why are they doing this? Because it seems like the best we could come up with is that it's a, you know, sort of like a Brad Smith ego thing. And I mean, it seems like it could be that, right?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I have to agree. It seems like 90, 95% of the report's really good. And there's just something that catches someone's eye and needs to be exaggerated, made more sensational.
Because in this most recent Microsoft report, I mean, we spoke about this part of it on the main Risky Business podcast yesterday. You know, it did show us some interesting stuff, like that Russian government-linked APT crews are starting to roll like fake ransomware attacks on targets in Poland, which is very, very interesting and something that we should all be paying attention to. But then they just throw all this other crap in the report and you just think, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly. I thought that was very significant. And to me, the other stuff takes away from it. It makes you doubt everything because they're not getting the potentially most sensational stuff exactly right.
Yeah. Well, look, let's move on to our next item. This is something that Adam and I covered yesterday, and it seems like you agree with us. The Department of Homeland Security's Cyber Safety Review Board has decided that the next report it's going to do is they're going to take a look at the activities of Lapsus and see if it can find some insights there. It really does look like you, me, Adam, we all sort of arrived at the same place on this, which is that, okay, fine, you could do a report into something like SolarWinds, but that's kind of an exotic, more advanced type of attack that's not really that relevant to most organizations, whereas a group of teenagers through some sort of distributed community all around the world being able to own major brands with really rubbish tradecraft is probably something that warrants a bit of contemplation and examination, right?
Yeah, exactly. So the SolarWinds stuff, you're looking at things that affect so few people. I guess it really comes down to, what do you want a cyber safety review board to do? And if you want it to improve the whole ecosystem, you've got to look at things that affect the whole ecosystem. And SolarWinds is so tailored and so niche that it's just simply not relevant. Yeah, so 100% agree.
Well, and I think also that with the damage that ransomware has caused over the last few years, you know, it'd be hard to find a CISO anywhere who's not really aware of that as a risk. Whereas I think probably a lot of people underestimate the risk from these like lunatic children who are out there causing havoc, right? So I think it's a decent place to shine a light.
Well, the evidence is that CISOs are underestimating that risk because they're not dealing with it very well. Like, it's not as if Lapsus has compromised, you know, one random company in the middle of nowhere. It's like big names. Yeah. Big names that you're surprised end up on their list of scalps.
They embellish, though, you know, like there are still so many people convinced that they owned Okta when the best they actually got was a screen cap of a third-party support workstation. All right, so another thing that you covered, again, we covered this in the main show, but there's an interesting dimension to all of this that we didn't talk about yesterday. So yesterday, and in the newsletter, you spoke, you've written about APT-41, which is an interesting like APT crew that does state-directed intelligence collection for the Chinese government, but started as a crime group that would target the gaming industry. and also steals cryptocurrency and stuff like that. So it looks like it's a crime group that was eventually brought in to do state-sponsored stuff, but they still do crime.
Yeah, yeah. State-sponsored stuff in addition to crime rather than replacing crime.
Yeah, 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 that's right. So I think the espionage is their side hustle rather than the crime, right? But what's interesting here is that according to the Secret Service, they stole something like $20 million of COVID relief money from the US government. Now, this is a drop in the bucket compared to the amount of money that was actually stolen from those programs, which is something around $100 billion, right? But with any program that you stand up like this that's got to get money out there very quickly, you expect this, right? Because you don't want to put crazy amounts of bureaucracy on it because you want the money to flow and you just have to tolerate some fraud.
Yep.
And yeah, so $20 million goes to APT 41. Now, obviously, this is an interesting situation where you have a state-aligned and sometimes state-backed group stealing money from the US government. But you and I just talking before we started recording, like one of the most interesting thing here is that the way this story came out, which by the looks of things looks like a Secret Service person leaked this to someone at NBC, and the story was later confirmed by CNN. There's some sort of signaling going on here, right?
Yeah, that's what struck me, is that it wasn't in an official report. It wasn't hidden in a table somewhere. It's quite upfront. The purpose of talking to the press was to air this story. So they're quite upfront that it's the Secret Service doing it, and they talk about certain officials. So that sort of, to me, said they're trying to send a message. And of course, who's the message to, except for the Chinese government?
I think the message is not, hey, you know, tell everyone to knock this off. I think the message is probably more along the lines of, hey, Xi, did you know that this is happening?
Well, I think the intended effect is to get them to stop it. And I think it's not because it's hugely damaging to the US. I think what it's actually hugely damaging to US-China relations, in the sense that I just get the feeling that this will really, really annoy lawmakers and policymakers. And I would describe it as a win for the hawks in terms of the US-China relationship. Now, I think everyone is hawkish, but some people are more hawkish than others. And whether that's good for the long-term relationship, I don't know. And so I think, well, definitely from a Chinese point of view, that's a bad outcome. You don't want the hawks to be empowered. So I think they've got motives to try and do something about it.
Yeah, I mean, you've written in the story here, we think this is the conclusion of your write-up of this. We think that this is a great example of the downsides of outsourcing hacking operations to loosely controlled groups. I think another way to express that is if you're going to lie down with dogs, you're going to get some fleas.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Now, there's a couple of smaller items that you have talked about in this week's newsletter. One of them is you've taken a quick look at a profile of Charlie Bell, who was brought into Microsoft to be the head of security there and to really whip the company in shape. And there was a lot of fanfare when this happened, and a lot of hopes that he would be able to turn things around. At the time that he was appointed, and he's a former AWS executive, you know, very capable human being. At the time that he was appointed, you wrote that you were skeptical if he would be able to penetrate the multiple layers of bullshit involved in working at a senior level in Microsoft and actually get some real stuff done. Looks like, sadly, Tom, it looks like you are right.
Yeah. So the reason I said that at the time is I was doing a bit of, I guess, reading between the lines of what Satya Nadella said, and he described security as an ambitious challenge. And I take that to mean that it's not your top priority. If it's your top priority, you say it's something we've fundamentally got to get right. You say it's your top priority. And
yeah, not, gee, this is a bit tricky, eh?
Yeah, this is going to be hard, but we've got the right person for it. You say we cannot afford to fail and we've got the right person for this.
We must succeed.
And so basically the profile says that there's a lot of resistance to things that Charlie Bell is trying to do. And so, you know, several times before that story, I wrote about problems Microsoft has had with security, and those problems haven't gone away since Bell has been there. And interestingly, in the profile, it says that Bell's responsible for delivering new products and services. And that seems to be the part that's going really well. So, improving
but this
security.
But this has been the sort of problem with Microsoft, right? Which is that they keep pumping out, you know, some pretty worthwhile security kit while their actual products just suck, like while their core products suck, right?
What I've noticed is that they're just not communicating well about security problems. So they're kind of, I called them in one edition, a sociopathic pedant, in that nothing they said was untrue, but it was deceptive. You know, when you actually care about security, you get those things right.
Yeah.
And that hasn't changed since Bell's been there. It appears that he's getting pushback. So the whole story seems entirely consistent with security not being a top priority. And because of Microsoft's importance in the whole ecosystem, I think it needs to be.
So the last thing that I want to touch on quickly, we did not have room for this in yesterday's show, which is some research has come out that has found, just looking at dark markets, and probably the most interesting finding is that like 90%+ of the activity on dark markets seems concentrated in at three places of the huge set that they looked at. So, you know, I think this really ties back to what I like to say about ransomware crews, which is that there's actually not that many individuals who are responsible for causing a lot of this harm. I think it's the same in dark markets as well, where a lot of the activity is centered around a handful of markets that may or may not even have common ownership. We just don't know.
Yeah, yeah. So the numbers are also quite small in the scheme of things. The researchers looked at 30 dark markets, and the total revenue over 8 months was $140 million.
Yeah.
And so
people don't want to wind up like Ross Ulbricht, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And the top one was $90 million. So the top three made up, like you said, a huge amount. And so just the concentration is huge. But the small size made me think about, you know, well, how much damage are they actually doing?
Yeah. I mean, there was a time when we thought that dark markets like Silk Road were kind of an unstoppable problem, right? And it's hard to say that now, because we really thought we were heading towards a world where you'd basically have eBay for heroin.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess the other thing that occurred to me is that you just look at that list and go, okay, if you're a law enforcement person, I'm thinking about disruption. I've got number one, number two, number three.
Yeah, 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 that's it. So I guess, you know, dark markets are around, but perhaps not the global major pervasive phenomenon we expected them to be. So that's, you know, we're ending on some happy news.
Is that a win? I guess that's a win.
I think it is. And you got to give it to the FBI too. You got to give it up to the FBI for the way that they were able to tackle that, because boy, oh boy, when those dominoes started falling back in the day, geez, they fell pretty hard.
Yeah, I think it took a while, but it sounds like those organizations are getting there.
Yeah, yeah, true. All right, Tom, you're in. Thank you very much for this discussion. Always fascinating to chat to you, my friend. And I think we're going to do it again next week.
Great.